It's amazing to think how dependent we become on our computers. We not only keep documents on them, but now it's often where we keep precious photos and other items we'd really hate to lose. For better or worse, computers are a large part of everyday life now, which means when something goes wrong with our machines, it can affect many different parts of our lives. Good morning. John Munson sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network today. Jesse LeGrew is a technical team lead within the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Division of Information Technology, or as those of us on the inside of the system refer to it as DOIT, focusing on desktop and laptop security projects. On campus, he can be found consulting on IT projects, helping faculty and staff resolve computer problems, or repairing infected computers. Jesse, great to have you with us today.
Great to be here.
I think Jesse's mic is not the one that's on. Let's try that again. There we go. Jesse, are you with me?
Yes, good morning.
Much better. Okay, so when we talk about, let's talk about the fact that we all carry a lot of different devices. I mean, we have that PC, probably desktop unit still, many of us, or maybe it's a laptop, but then there are tablets and there are smartphones. We have all kinds of devices at our disposal, and they all contain data. And it's data we don't want to lose, whether it's a family photo or maybe a list of passwords to our various bank accounts. That can be a real problem with multiple devices. The solution supposedly is the cloud, and is that the best storage answer for us when we have multiple devices and lots of information?
That's definitely the more popular option, especially lately. A lot of companies have given very great resources for cloud-based solutions, which, you know, you want to take a picture and you do have five other electronic devices, you might want to see that picture on those other devices as well. So a lot of these cloud storage solutions allow you to keep at a very close grasp that data. So you can take a picture, you can have it on your laptop immediately, you can view it on your phone or your tablet. So it's becoming very popular just for data availability, but there's also a lot of very nice backup services that give you access to your data remotely from a different computer should your computer crash, and they make it very, very easy.
So what should we be backing up?
So that really depends on the person. Really, the data that you want to keep is really the stuff that you're going to want to back up. So in my case, maybe I'm a little bit different than most people. I back up my entire computer so I can restore it in case the whole thing crashes. I don't have to spend time reinstalling applications or reinstalling the operating system. I can easily restore a full backup to get up and running very quickly. But some people might just want a few documents. They might just want to back up their photos. The more stuff you back up, the more storage you need, whether it's an external hard drive, whether it's cloud storage, to back up that data, and that has, you know, a potential monetary effect.
And how often should we be backing up our data?
That, once again, is a very, very personal question. It really depends on how often you're changing files, what is the most important data that you have for you. One service that I use, it actually takes a look at what's on my hard drive, and every 15 minutes, it actually will back up series of data. If you don't have a lot of stuff that you need to frequently change in your computer, so you don't really have a need to back it up, maybe it's once a day, once a week, once a month. Generally, I recommend people do it at least once a week, but it really does depend on what kind of data you're storing, how important it is to you, how frequently you're changing it. I think a lot of people have had that situation too, where you're modifying a file, you hit save, and you made a mistake, and now I actually can't go back and look at my old file. I lost all the other things that I had changed. A backup solution allows you to also recover previous versions of files depending on your backup solution.
Okay, well, that's all well and good, but, I mean, there are a lot of ways to back up. We mentioned the cloud. You talked about external devices. It's amazing how big these things have gotten in terms of what they'll store and how small these devices are. I mean, you've got 2 and 4 and several terabytes of data in something you can hold in the palm of your hand. The choices we have are pretty big. I mean, from a thumb drive, a 16 gigabyte thumb drive or 32 or even bigger, all the way up to several terabytes in a very small device. How do we decide which one of those we really need?
And, you know, when taking a look at your computer, you need to find out, you know, how much data am I storing? But also, when looking at the location of where you're going to store your backups, you know, most of the time, you're going to store, a lot of people have an external hard drive and they store their backups maybe in the same room they have their computer. Well, what if there's a fire? You might lose your backup then. So one of the best strategies is always to keep your backup somewhere else. This is another reason why cloud solutions are extremely popular, because you immediately have that remote backup and you can access it just about anywhere in the world. A lot of other people might use a safe deposit box. They might store it with a relative, but it's always a good idea to simply store your data, your backups, and your original source data separately. That way, if anything happens to physically damage the environment, you're going to be more secure in knowing you can get your backups.
Well, we're starting to get callers and Facebook posts on this topic, and so we're going to go to those in just a moment. 800-642-1234, the number to call with your question. Right now, we're talking about backing up your data on something external to whatever the device is, whether it's your phone or a tablet, a laptop, desktop computer, whatever it is. We're talking about ways to protect the data that you have there and make it available should something bad happen. 800-642-1234. You can also post to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and we'll take those questions as well. And let's take one right now. Kathy writes on Facebook, I have a Mac desktop and iPad that processes my emails through Outlook. I can't keep up with trying to clean up my emails from years past. Any tips to streamline cleaning up old emails?
That's a great question. And, you know, this might be specific to Outlook. It really does depend on the service you're using. In this case, I'm guessing it's something like Office 365. It could be a different solution, but what's nice with Outlook is it does have an option, if it is a cloud-based solution, to actually archive old emails. If you actually go to within Tools on Outlook, it will give you an option. Now, this is going to be different depending on whether you're using Mac OS or Windows. In my case, I'm actually using Windows, so some of the options may be slightly different. But you can usually right-click on even the inbox and create an archival option, which could run every week or every year. A lot of people do that, so I only care about seeing the emails I've had in the last week, not the last year or 10 years. You can use the archive procedure to archive that really easily. And if you are using Office 365, you have those same options on the web interface. It would just be under those auto archive. So that's where I'd recommend going.
Kathy, thanks for that question. You can submit your question to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and we'll try to get to it. We had a caller who couldn't stay with us who wanted to know, what does it mean when you pull up a website and it says null on the screen? What should you do? Now, that's one I haven't seen before.
Yeah, and that, off the top of my head, I can't, it's, you know, a lot of these times it's difficult to see the error message. In this case, it actually could be an issue with the website itself. A lot of people are used to seeing, you know, what they call a 404 error, that the page is not found. In this case, null could be a wide variety of things. It actually could even be a diagnostic message made by the developer of the website itself. Most likely, basically, something's wrong.
Okay.
It's hard to know exactly what's wrong in this case.
Well, let's go back to talking about the cloud for just a moment. Some people have, you know, security concerns or doubts about the security of the cloud. They want to make sure that their data is theirs and not being looked at by other people. How valid are those concerns, do you think?
I think those concerns are very valid. Obviously, when storing your data somewhere, you do have a concern of where it's being stored. If I look at an external hard drive and I put in a safe deposit box at the bank, now we're pretty certain that's safe, but we still have a trust of the bank to not open up that safe deposit box and look at any of the information inside of it. We have to give that trust to different companies. Depending on the company, there are agreements that can make you more certain that your data is going to be stored either within the country or that it's more difficult for people to get access to the data or that it's, you know, encrypted. One of the biggest things is not just having the data encrypted in transit. So if you're going to a website and you like to look for that little lock, it means that while the data is communicating between your computer and that website, that it's secure. But if those web files are sitting on a web server somewhere, that they could also be encrypted at rest. So it gives you additional security, but also having multiple factors of authentication. And this is something that a lot of companies are enhancing. Multiple factor of authentication is basically so what you know, like a password. That's what most people are used to using to access just about anything is a password. But it could be also what you are. So in this case, biometrics. It could be a retina scan. It could be a thumbprint. And then something could be what you have. So Google Authenticator is something that a lot of people use for various services because it's free. And it works very well. I actually use it for, you know, my bank account. I actually use it for encrypted password vaults. So there's a lot of flexible alternatives that are out there, but the more layers of security you have, hopefully it will also keep even the people within the company from accessing your data. There's still that element of trust, so I would always recommend researching different companies and where you're going to store your data. And kind of make an informed decision, but it is difficult with everything that's going on out there. As long as you pick a larger, reputable company, hopefully you're going to be more secure, but it doesn't mean that, you know, there are risks. There are data breaches.
All right, let's take a call here before we go to our first break. Jim is with us from Whitefish Bay with kind of an old school storage question. Jim, good morning.
Good morning. I have a 5 1/4 inch floppy disk with a file that I would like to retrieve. I don't have the old computer. My new computer can't read a 5 1/4. Is there anybody who could transfer that to a more modern device for me?
And that's a great question. Actually, it's one that commonly comes up. So I was actually looking for different solutions. Either, you know, you might be able to buy, you can get external USB floppy drives. However, I wasn't able to find one quickly for the 5 1/4 inch drive. One thing I'd actually recommend doing, any local computer repair store, a lot of them will keep old hardware, so they can actually do those data recoveries or data transfers. Any data recovery service, they're going to be able to they're going to have something. If they don't have it, they're going to buy it so they can actually do the recovery itself. But you might be just good enough with any local repair shop. I think around your area there's a Quality Computer Service, probably Milwaukee PC. You could even look at some of the other stores, I think even Best Buy if there's something local. I would go to any repair shop and just see what they have. If they don't have it, they're going to know where to get it, but you should be able to hopefully just make a few phone calls and have that answer pretty quickly.
All right, Jim, thanks thanks so much for the call. We're going to take a break here, and when we come back, we'll have more with Jesse LeGru, a technical team lead within the UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. And we're answering your computer questions today. We're primarily talking about backing up your data and what you should do, how you should do it, how often, and where. But if you have questions about computers in general, by all means, fire them off. 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. You can also post to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and we'll get your question on the air as soon as we can. Again, 800-642-1234. Or you can also email talk@WPR.org. I'm John Munson in for Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Larry Mueller on the Larry Mueller Show. Today we're talking computers with Jesse LeGru and with you if you join us at 800-642-1234 or post your question or comment to Facebook. Look for the Larry Mueller Show. We had a caller who couldn't hang on from Racine, Wally in Racine, who has this question. I have a ghost program where I run some of my programs on Windows XP under Windows 7. Do I still need to download my antivirus to my Windows XP, even though it is already downloaded to my Windows 7?
And another great question. It really does kind of depend on the antivirus program you have installed, but a best practice would be to have an antivirus program installed within that Windows XP environment as well. That's basically the compatibility mode for... or they call it XP mode for Windows 7. But it's always a good recommendation, even if you're running kind of any virtual machine, or whether it's Windows, Linux, to have antivirus within that virtual environment as well. There are limitations with antivirus programs reading those virtual machines, so it's just the best idea.
All right, Wally, good luck with that, and stay safe out there. 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, your computer questions answered today by Jesse LeGru. Speaking of security and things like that and antivirus software, are there virus or malware that are making the rounds that we should be particularly aware of right now?
You know, honestly, now that I think about it, not too much. You usually hear about big viruses coming out, like Blaster and Sasser and even a lot of the other ones over the last, you know, decade or two. But right now there isn't too much as far as a virus going on, but there is this weird little iPhone. Well, it's the iPhone, iPad glitch where people are having basically shutdowns due to preview and text messages. So if somebody sends you this message and it pops up on your phone, it will just reboot your phone. It's not actually doing anything bad to your phone. Granted, it's an inconvenience. It's more of an annoyance. But in this case, the way it needs to interpret for that preview on your screen, so when you get a text message, a lot of people will see it before they unlock their phone and actually open up the message. It's that preview function that's and the misinterpretation of the characters that's causing that shutdown. People are seeing this. There isn't a fix released by Apple yet. There should be one soon. The best idea right now is to simply disable the preview, which you can go into the general settings on the iPhone or the iPad. Disable preview so you don't have it. It's not a virus, but it's just an interesting little bug that a lot of people have been playing various pranks with their friends with.
All right. I don't have an iPhone at the moment, so I haven't seen that one, but my wife does, and I mentioned this to her and because she gets a lot of texts, so that's something to be aware of. 800-642-1234, the number to call to be on the program. Gary is with us in Rhinelander today. Gary, how you doing?
Hey, guys. Yeah, it's a beautiful day. Glad to hear from you. I love your show. So, I've got a question that I've got a desktop computer that it's not an Apple. It's just your whatever the other major brand is that... it's about 6-7 years old, and I use it every day for my business and keep everything on it. Yeah, sometimes I'm going to have to back up and such. But I'm wondering, from the age of the computer and it being on all the time, that should or which is cheaper, to replace the desktop or to maybe replace some of the components inside the computer, which, you know, I believe is fairly easy to do. So that's my question.
That's it's always, I even actually had this issue a few months ago. I was about to buy a brand new computer, and then in the end I decided to build one. It's something I hadn't done for quite some time. A lot of times, you know, when you have a standard computer, you can do some upgrades that will be cheap, that, you know, you don't have to invest $500 to $1,000 or $2,000 in a brand new computer. You can do incremental upgrades. Does the computer seem to perform fine for you, or do you need more speed? Is there any, performance bottlenecks you're seeing?
Performance-wise, no, I'm not seeing anything. I do hear a weird sound once in a while. And when I do that, then I basically take it apart and blow it out and dust it out. And but, you know, I'm wondering, you know, that when the computer is working, you hear the sound of the drive working. And sometimes that sound can be a little louder than the other time. So, you know, it's an Asus computer. You know, it has like almost 1 gigabyte of space. So I guess that's what one hard drive that's divided into two 450 gigabytes. So it's almost 1 terabyte. But
okay. Usually, when you look at a lot of the Asus cases, too, they are they can fit different parts. The rattling, too, could be the hard drive or could be the fan. The fans are generally cheap to replace. Hard drives are generally cheap to replace as well, and you can get just an immense amount of storage. If the computer's functioning fine for you, I might actually just look into replacing some of the fans. It is about 6 or 7 years. Fans are inexpensive. It should be relatively easy to replace. If you were concerned with performance, maybe not so much in how much capacity you have for your hard drive. A lot of people like to upgrade to what they call solid-state hard drives. It will increase the speed, and it's, you know, a simple hard drive replacement. Most of those will come with some software to help you clone your existing data onto this new drive and then just turn your computer on. Those would be two very simple upgrades that would probably, one, reduce the sound, especially if you have an old mechanical hard drive, solid state, there's no noise. But also replacing the fan, that's most likely where you're seeing that noise come in. And the solid state drive could be anywhere from 50 to a lot of money. For what you need, it's probably, you could probably get something within probably about $100, and the fans, you know, they can be $5. They're pretty cheap. I would actually recommend looking at those minor upgrades, and that will help you with the sound, and it will probably increase your performance a little bit.
Gary, good luck. Good luck with your computer. Let's take another call. Let's go to Adele in Mazomanie next. Adele, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, good morning. I have a quick question. I have a passport external drive that I back up my data every 2 weeks or so. But did I hear your guest say you can back up operating systems and you can back up programs? I have never been able to do that with this external drive.
Yeah, that's and so this definitely depends on, you know, the type of computer you're using. Is it Linux? Is it macOS? Is it Windows? And also what hardware you're using and what software is using to back up. So a lot of these are factors. For a Windows-based computer, there is a built-in backup utility within Windows, at least for Windows 7, 8, and 8.1, that should be able to do a full system backup. That would allow you to restore the operating system and kind of everything from one point in time. The one thing these programs won't let you do is back up an application. A smartphone, you might be able to do that, but you can't, you know, back up Word and then move it to a different computer. It's really the whole system you're backing up, which means anything that might be potentially buggy with the system or, you know, not working right, that's getting backed up too. But it really does depend on the type of backup software you're using. I might actually, if you do have a newer version of Windows, you might actually want to try the system backup utility within Windows. Otherwise, there's a lot of companies that have services for this, and you can buy the software for it.
Well, I guess there's also a question between what's the difference between a program and an app as far as your computer is concerned. But in the newer Windows versions, what you are downloading are apps now instead of actual software. What's the difference?
They're honestly the same thing. It's kind of just a different it's a semantic thing. So when I think about an app, I think about a mobile device, but there is an application. It's just a shortened version of the word. All of these apps or applications, they are software that's developed by software developers. It's really the same thing. If I look on my phone, I get a very simplified view of it. So I just see a button. If I look on my Windows computer or Mac OS, Mac OS is actually fairly simple. It's kind of the same thing. You get a simple button. If you look at Windows, you get all these folders and all these weird files and everything else. In the end, the apps or applications, it's just all software.
You talked about cloning a hard drive earlier. Is that something that Adele might be able to make use of to get something that he could just plug in and start over again?
Yeah, there are. The one thing, especially when you already have backup data, I'd recommend keeping that backup data somewhere if you decide to switch to a different method. You could buy an external hard drive from pretty much anywhere and use the built-in Windows backup utility. That will actually create a full system restore backup. There are a lot of other programs that I've used in the past that work really well. One is Acronis. That I've done offline backups, but it does have an online backup option. But it should allow you to fully restore. And a lot of the hard drives, if you are going to get an additional one just to test with a new backup solution or to store one backup in one location and one in another for safety, many of those do come with software. So it really depends on what you decide to go with. It doesn't mean you need to use that software, however, if it does come with it. So macOS has Time Machine. It's really easy. It works full system backup. So most people just ignore any of the software that a hard drive might come with. I would recommend trying the Windows backup, seeing if it works for you. But there are a lot of other alternatives out there.
Adele, thanks for your question. Let's go to Duluth next, where David is waiting to get on the air. David, go ahead.
Hi. I've got Windows 7, and yesterday a thing popped up for a free upgrade to Windows 10, and I was wondering what the ramifications would be of doing that.
And actually, I'm trying to look right now. I think this is kind of a reservation to upgrade to Windows 10. Some people like to be on what you might consider the bleeding edge, and here's a new operating system, and it's shiny, and it does things for me. Honestly, if you're fine with Windows 7, you have no issues with the computer, there's probably no real benefit to move to Windows 10. Windows 7 is still supported. Same thing with Windows 8 or 8.1. There's no, you know, there might be some security benefits or some other things you can do.
David, let me ask you, do you know for a fact that this pop-up came from Microsoft?
Well,
I'm always suspicious when I see free on a pop-up.
It says Microsoft on it.
Okay. Well, it doesn't necessarily mean it came from Microsoft, but Jesse LeGru, something says free on it. I shouldn't some alarm bells go off someplace?
Yeah, and anything free I generally would be very leery of. In this case, I decided to actually look it up. And it does appear that this is a real thing. There was actually an update released that is giving people these prompts. This article is actually from about 15 hours ago. So they just started doing this. And it does appear that this is probably legitimate. However, you know, there's many pages I would read the whole thing just to be completely certain. Now, as far as assuming this is legitimate, I always check the sender. I do research on, you know, some of the communications just for email safety. You can even kind of Google some of the strings or some of the text in the email, and most people will be able to find, hey, this is a scam, this is real. As far as the upgrade itself, if this is legitimate, I mean, you can upgrade to Windows 10. However, if you do upgrade to Windows 10, there's a likelihood that the software that's on your machine right now, running under Windows 7, may not run under Windows 10. So that would be a compatibility concern I would have. If it works fine for you right now, I probably wouldn't upgrade. You might wait until you get a new computer in a few years or something else, but you're going to have software compatibility concerns. Some software, it was only designed to run on Windows 7 and 8. It won't run on Windows 10.
David, good luck with that. And one thing, Jesse LeGru, that's happening when we get beyond Windows 7, I ran into it with Windows 8.1. It appears that you really can't own software anymore. You can only rent it.
in some cases, it really does depend on the software. A lot of things, once again, are becoming more cloud-based. So you're seeing software like Office 365. So you have Word in the cloud, and you can have it on your computer. But it also means you might be able to use it in a more mobile fashion on just about any device you use because you have this subscription. Adobe's doing it. You can still buy software, but it is definitely changing where you have more of a subscription model, and you can pay annually for software. But even for most of those software packages, sometimes there are kind of box items you can still buy in a store, but it's increasing to do it that way, and it does kind of make it, it does make it flexible where you don't have to go to a store, purchase a box, and type in a key. You log in with whatever credentials you have, and you can use the software. So it's definitely changing a lot, and it's probably going to become even more popular in the future.
Here's an email from Maggie, who writes, "My email provider, Comcast, shut off my email access because I moved outside their service area. They gave me no notice that this would happen. Thus, I lost about 10 years of emails because it never occurred to me that I needed to back up any of them. Tax forms, medical records, bank records, work correspondence, etc. Comcast insists they have no obligation to provide me access to my account. Do you have any advice for me?"
So there's a few different things. Part of me would wonder how you accessed your email. Maybe you, if you did use Outlook or a different program, there might be a possibility of getting some of that email still off of even your computer. The only thing I could really recommend would be to keep contacting Comcast. If they deleted the account, there's most likely nothing they can do anyway. However, if the account's still there and they can reactivate it so you could potentially access and download, at least there's a chance. If it turns out they did delete your account, there's not much else they're going to be able to do for you. So the only thing you can do is try, but if they did delete it and you don't have any program you'd usually use on your computer to access it, such as Outlook or Thunderbird, you're probably going to not get access to the email.
That's if you're an Outlook user, it's pretty easy to archive, and you mentioned it close to the top of the show. That's probably something everybody should consider doing.
I definitely recommend using an email client. A lot of things are going to, you know, the cloud. You know, people are using web interface only to access email. The benefit of having an email client is it allows you to download and archive. So it's allowing you effectively to back up your email. If you did have email for 10 years, you might have used a client. If that's the case, hopefully you can still get access to those files or even go to a local computer repair shop. You know, they can offer data recovery services. That I see is probably the biggest chance for getting some of that data back outside of working directly with Comcast.
All right, Maggie, good luck with that. And let's go back to the phone. Stephanie is in Manitowoc. Stephanie, welcome to the program.
Hi. So I'm calling because I work at a small business, and we have 4 Macs, and we're looking for an affordable on-site backup solution that might even be able to be a shared drive for everyone in the office. Is there any kind of affordable but good solutions for that?
There are a few, and it kind of depends on how much data are storing. Do you know how much data you would be looking to back up?
I know one person's photo and video heavy, but everyone else is mostly files, small files, like Word docs and Excel docs.
Okay. For most users, it's just about any hard drive is going to work. The video and the video heavy end user, honestly, could be a massive amount of data, depending on how much video stuff they're doing. You can buy some in-house solutions that will store it, you know, at your location. Were you concerned with any kind of disaster recovery? Should there be, you know, a fire or something else at your business?
Yeah, we were. We were considering taking one, like getting 2 and doing one off-site, moving them back and forth. And, of course, we were considering cloud as well.
Yep, and that is one of those options where you would have, you know, two external hard drives or something where you have one in a safe deposit box or at home and the other one at work. And people, you basically do that rotation, so you make sure your data, if something happens, you know, maybe you lost a week of work, but it's still there. That's one option. Now, if you want all four computers to back up to that simultaneously, there's a lot of storage solutions out there that do come with applications built in to do that. Synology has a network attached storage device that, you know, you can probably have just about as much data as you want on there. You can even expand the storage if you want. They have their own backup software that you can install on the computers and back those up. In this case, you did have, was it 4 Macs?
Yeah, it was 4 Macs.
Another option, if you do want kind of that full system state backup where all the computers can be up and running, another option is actually to get 4 external hard drives, one for each computer, and you would have an effective backup for each computer, and it would also have file revisioning, meaning that if somebody changed a file today and needed to go back a week ago, they could actually do that using Time Machine. So it's a nice built-in feature. You don't have to buy any other software. The hardware's, it's inexpensive just depending on how much stuff you're storing, and it will give you a fully functional backup where you don't need to reinstall the operating system or any of the applications. So that's a great option. One thing that I do use as an offsite backup for myself is a subscription called CrashPlan. CrashPlan works on Windows, Mac OS, and Linux, and it's a subscription based, but they do have, you know, business plans. They also have, in my case, I have a family plan, so I actually have many of my relatives actually on my plan. It's fairly inexpensive, and it's unlimited data storage. And this is the program that kind of looks at my computer every 50 minutes. Hey, did something change? I should back it up. Meaning you can have a lot of data out there. You know it's there remotely. You can access it via web interface if you want to. So it gives you a lot of flexibility, one, to work remotely, but also just to get those backup files restored. So that's another great cloud option. And there's a lot of other ones out there, but I really like CrashPlan, and I really like Time Machine. If you have 4 Macs, you can go and you can also get the Time Capsule. It's a little bit slow. I've used it in the past, but it does work. And it's probably anywhere between $200 and $400. Time Capsule is probably the best solution for Macs if you didn't want to have separate hard drives. Otherwise, subscription services like CrashPlan are great for having that immediate disaster recovery plan.
Stephanie, good luck with your small business backup plan. Let's take another quick call here. Jean is in Eau Claire. Jean, good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I will try to explain this. You know how on an iPhone, when you go into an application or an icon, they tend to build up in the background, and if you don't go in and double click and delete those, they take away from battery life?
Yep.
Okay. Does the same thing happen on a laptop where if you go into an application, all of those build up in the background and they take up space so that it slows the computer down?
My
computer is getting slower and slower and slower, and I'm wondering if I need to take it in and have a lot of the applications removed from the background in order to speed it up. I don't know if that's a silly question or not, but it's the only thing I can think of that's slowing it down so much.
It's a very, it's actually a very common problem. You know, you use a computer for a very long time, and it, you know, it slows down just because of daily use. Or there's some software running in the background that might be taking some of your resources. The one thing to note too is this may not be the issue in your case. Sometimes when you see performance issues and you really haven't done too much with your computer, even installed new applications, there is the possibility of, you know, a potential hardware failure. If your hard drive's dying, for example, it could slow down. Now, I'm not stating that's what's happening in your case, but there are some great utilities you can use to find out if you have any hardware problems and also software problems. One thing I'd recommend just for everyone is to run Malwarebytes. It's a anti-malware software, super anti-spyware. Now, this is stuff to find kind of potential malicious software, but it's good at kind of cleaning up the background, finding anything that's running, and you can hopefully terminate it. If it is bad, it's going to find it and hopefully remove it for you.
Well, then you can always go to your task manager and see what programs are actually running, and sometimes that's a real eye-opener.
Yep, and because task manager gives you a lot of information about the CPU and how heavily it's being taxed. Same thing with memory. It might be slowing down because you don't have enough memory, or there's something else running in the background, or it could be a potential hardware failure. There could be a lot of reasons for a computer slowing down. You could go into a repair shop, but there's actually a lot of good free software out there that can, one, you know, test your hard drive. You can use Task Manager to find out how your resources are looking, and there's software to help clean up some of that clutter in the background, and a lot of that is free.
And I mean, and we need to get to a break. I don't want to go too far into the weeds on this, but another aspect of this is if you have an older computer with maybe an older processor and you've been updating your software applications, some of them require a lot more horsepower than maybe their older versions did. And it could just be that your processor just isn't able to keep up anymore. Is that fairly common as well, Jesse, especially with older computers?
Yeah, it definitely is. If you have a computer that's about 5 to 10 years old and you install a large software package that just came out within the last year, you know, there's a likelihood it could be slowing down, especially if you have big things like Adobe Suites, Photoshop, et cetera. Those, you know, they require a little bit more power to run, and they might run on older hardware, but it can be a concern.
All right, Gene, good luck with that. And we'll take more of your calls and questions in emails and Facebook posts as the Larry Mueller Show continues. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back with more with Jesse LeGrew, technical team lead within the UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. We're answering your computer questions today on the Larry Mueller Show, 800-642-1234. Talk at WPR.org or post to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. I'm John Munson in for Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of WPR. Jesse LeGrew is my guest on today's program. We're talking about computer problems that you may be having, inviting you to call in with your questions. Focused a little bit today on storage and backup. That's something that a lot of us neglect. We had an email earlier from a person who had a big problem with email. Her email wasn't backed up. She lost her account through her internet service provider, and now she's got about 10 years' worth of stuff she can't get at. Don't let that happen to you. We're talking about how to best back up your data and how often you should do it and various ways to do it with Jesse LeGrew, technical team lead within the University of Wisconsin-Madison Division of Information Technology. He focuses on desktop and laptop security projects. Let's take a call from Kevin in Tomahawk next. Kevin, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. We had a hard drive, an external hard drive, about 3 years old, and it crashed, and it took like a thousands of my wife's pictures with her. And we were through the Geek Squad, and we sent it in, and they said it's going to be like $500 if they can even get the pictures back. My question to you is, what would be the alternative? They suggested we buy a new hard drive every year and put the other one in storage. Will that work? Or she doesn't want to go on the cloud.
Yep. So if you're going to be doing local backups, so any hardware, regardless of what it is, at some point it will most likely fail. Whether it's, you know, an external hard drive that's a solid state drive or even a mechanical drive. If you want to be certain you have enough backup copies, having two and two physically different locations would be a minimum to make sure that if you have an issue at one location due to environmental issues, floods or fires, you're safe. But also, if you have two backups, if one of those backups fails, at least you have another one. You can keep on doing that depending on how secure you want to feel with your data, but usually that's going a little overboard. You can go, hey, I'm going to get five hard drives, but that seems like a bit much. But having multiple backups would be a good option. Two, I think, would be fine.
I actually have four, two for work and two for home. And I'm always wondering if I should get another one. So maybe I'm paranoid. But, Kevin, it never hurts to have a backup for your backup, because Murphy's Law is very active in the computer front. If something can go wrong, it's going to, and it's just a matter of time. Good luck getting your pictures back. That's always horrifying when you lose a lot of pictures, and those are great memories that we want to preserve, and it's that's one reason why you want to make sure they're safe. Eric in Madison, you'll be next. Eric, thanks for joining us today.
Okay, thanks for having me. I have a question about my computer, which is an older iMac. I bought it 8 years ago, and I only upgraded the operating system once in that time, so I'm pretty far behind on as far as operating systems go. I have Mac OS X 10.5.8, and that prevents me from doing a number of things that I'd like to do. For example, downloading the newest version of Skype or buying a photo book from Apple, because the old operating system doesn't support that. So I would either want to upgrade the operating system again, or I want to buy a new computer. But I've heard that it's possible that upgrading the operating system can slow the computer down. I'm not sure about that, so I'm trying to decide whether to upgrade the operating system or possibly buy a new computer.
And it is possible that it could slow down your computer when you upgrade. You kind of have, I guess, one of two things happening. Sometimes often it's usually slower. Sometimes it actually does speed up. The last few versions of macOS, they tried to make it so that when you upgraded, you actually received a faster computer, and that it worked more efficiently. Now, the one thing I'd be concerned with your hardware, since it is about 7 or 8 years old, is just to verify that it will work either with the very latest version of macOS, which right now, without having the App Store, uncertain whether it's a free upgrade or whether you have to pay a small fee. I know the last few were just free upgrades, and you could upgrade. But one option, if it is, let's assume it's a very minimal cost, and you can do the upgrade, or even free, one thing I'd recommend would be using some kind of program to do a backup, which means you could actually restore to the older version if you wanted to with the full operating system. And there's some programs out there that can do it, but it really depends on that cost and whether the hardware can keep up with it. If you had Time Machine, which unfortunately I don't believe is on, and maybe I'm wrong, if it is on 10.5.8, then Time Machine is a great option to back up and then restore. You can do a full backup. You can upgrade your operating system. If it turns out it's really slow, you can actually restore from backup, and you're back from back to square one. You can still use the computer. And if you decided to always buy a new one, you could. But I would just be concerned with really compatibility and the latest versions. It's about, I think, 5 versions out of date, and I don't think 10.5 is supported anymore by Apple, which is one reason you can't download those apps. So you're going to have to upgrade at some point. It just depends on, you know, whether you need the hardware, but that's one reason I'd try to back it up first so you can restore at least a fully functioning computer that you have now, even if it does have limitations.
Eric, good luck on that upgrade. That can be a problem with your phone too. I mean, you're happy with whatever the iPhone is, and there's a new one that comes out, and suddenly, you know, if you're two versions behind, if you're still using an iPhone 4 and we're up to iPhone 6 point something, that can be a problem for your iPhone as well.
Yep, definitely can.
800-642-1234. Let's see if we can we'll be able to sneak one more call in here at least before we go to the news at the top of the hour. Rosie is in Eagle River. Rosie, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I had an issue where I went to pay an online bill, and I got a message saying, doesn't look like you're in your normal device. You know, we're going to send a security code to your email, which I thought was very strange. So I went to my email, which was Yahoo, and had the same issue. Said, you've never signed in from this device before. So it sent me to my recovery email. And what it turned out to be was, it says that when I looked at my activity in my email accounts, it doesn't show me. It used to say Eagle River, Wisconsin as the device. And now it says both the email and the recovery email says that my device is in Amsterdam, Netherlands. So I thought maybe that was just a Yahoo thing, but then I also, of course, you know, trying to pay something through the bank had an issue. So I presumed it's more about something is on my computer, and I've gone to as many discussion groups and Google, you know, how I'm not sure if another ISP can actually take over your ISP. I called my local ISP and got the number of hours, and I'm sort of just not knowing what to do from here.
All right, let's let Jesse have a shot at this, and we're getting close to news time.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, great.
So this is the security message you saw is actually kind of a common one. I get it, you know, if I'm paying a different bill and I do use a different computer. So it's a similar thing. Basically, it sounds like somebody might have credentials for any of your accounts or something else. There might be something bad running on your computer. I would recommend, changing passwords just on your accounts that you're concerned with, potentially even your computer itself, and running some anti-malware programs just for a checkup on your system. Super anti-spyware, completely free and works really well. Malwarebytes, another good one. I would recommend running those and also changing passwords, because it sounds like people might be accessing things they shouldn't be.
Yeah, you don't want to see your computer suddenly controlled by someone in Amsterdam. Rosie, good luck with that. We're against the news break here. We'll be back in about 6 minutes and have more with Jesse LeGrew. Go ahead and call during the news. We'll get you in the queue and take your call as soon as we can when we come back. We're talking about computers today, a lot of computer problems to discuss. After the news, I've got someone with a question about Skype and Windows 8.1 that they'd like you to answer, so we have that to look forward to. 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, talk@WPR.org, or go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page and leave your comment or question there. We're talking computers with Jesse LeGrew today on the Larry Mueller Show. I'm John Munson, in for Larry on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, with so many of us using computers every day at home, at work, or both, we rely on them a lot, and that means easy-to-understand tech advice is a valuable thing. Hi, I'm John Munson, sitting in today for Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. Jesse LeGrew is a technical team lead within the UW-Madison Division of Information Technology, focusing on desktop and laptop security projects. On campus, he can be found consulting on IT projects, helping faculty and staff resolve computer problems, or repairing infected computer. Jesse, thanks again for spending time with us today.
Thank you.
Well, here's a question, and we mentioned, you know, there are lots of different versions of Windows available right now. Some people are still running Windows 7, some are running Windows 8.1, and there's even a Windows 10 that's out there that's just coming online now. Here's a question that's kind of related to that. I'm wondering, a person who says, I have had a Skype account for a couple of years. I could access it from any computer or device running Skype. I just bought a new computer running Windows 8.1. I installed the Skype app, but it will only recognize my Windows ID, the one that I had to establish when I first started using Windows 8.1, rather than the one that I established to use Skype elsewhere. What can I do?
So there could be a few things in this case. So Windows 8.1, they have what they call this Metro interface, which means they also have Metro apps. You can actually, on Windows 8.1, have two totally different versions, and both the latest version of Skype. One is the traditional interface that most people are used to, and one is this Metro app, which may have different functionality and might require a Microsoft sign-on. Generally, the Metro apps require those Microsoft IDs. It's very likely that's the issue. So I'd recommend just going to the Skype website and downloading hopefully the latest version, and then hopefully it's not a Metro app. But you also have to be very when you look for the application, since the start menu is completely different, there's going to be two Skypes. They're going to look a little different, and it's going to be difficult to choose which one. Eventually, you'll probably get the hang of it. I'm guessing it's just because it's using the Metro interface. I do have Skype on my computer. And I'm trying to load it up here just to see the interface. But usually there will be an option to sign in this case. It gives me a Skype sign-in, or I can use a Microsoft account. And this is the latest version, so it should function fine. I think it's probably just that Metro app interface.
Okay.
So go to the website and take a look.
And good luck with that. Here are a couple of Facebook questions. One from Peter in Watertown. I'm having issues with my PC keyboard settings. Where do I go to turn off the ignore repetitive keystrokes setting?
So any of the keyboard stuff is going to be located in the control panel. So just about any version of Windows, go to the start menu. Either you're going to have a control panel option right away, or you'll see it under programs. As soon as you get there, there's going to be an option for keyboard or keyboard properties. Then they have the option for setting kind of the repetitive keyboard detection to either extend it or to shorten it. However, that's pretty much the only thing you can do. There's not many other settings, but that's where you can find it for the keyboard.
All right. Thanks, Peter, for that question. Here's another question from Facebook, this one from David. Jesse mentioned some malware removal software earlier. Could you restate what that was called?
Yes, there is one. It's called Malwarebytes, M-A-L-W-A-R-E. Malware is, you know, the bad stuff people are concerned with. And then Bytes, B-Y-T-E-S. Malwarebytes is a great program. So is Super Anti-Spyware. Spyware and malware, they use those terms kind of interchangeably. But Super Anti-Spyware, which you can get for free. There's a lot of other stuff out there. If you just want a background refresh and clean up your computer, there's something also called CCleaner, all one word, and that can help you to hopefully optimize some of your computer performance as well.
Well, the thing about Malwarebytes you can expect is if you don't buy the program, you can expect Malwarebytes to remind you that you haven't purchased the program about every 15 or 20 minutes or so. And that's one of the things people have complained about Malwarebytes. It works great, but they really, really, really want you to buy it.
Yep, and that's the case with a lot of them. A lot of times you'll just get some ads, so it works fine, and you're going to get nagged a little bit. It just depends on the software term. Some you can pay for, some are free, but a lot of them have value, even the free ones.
All right, Chris in Sparta is on the phone. Let's go to Chris's call next. Chris, hello.
Hi, guys. I was just calling in because I'm currently going through the process of recovering some of my own data. I had a hard drive installed in a computer that I put together, and the screen went black, and I had to go ahead and reinstall a new hard drive and operating system and whatnot. So then I hooked up the old drive to a USB port with a power device so I could open up the contents in a Windows-friendly environment, but that wasn't working at all. So I got stuck trying to get it to a company that I found that really worked out pretty good. I found them online. I don't know if you want the name of it or not, but they recovered the data, and the price tag was about $1,200. There was some sort of a weird RAID configuration that was going on between two drives backing each other up. But I was wondering with the I use Norton for my antivirus software, and it has a backup option in that, but I believe, does that just go to the hard drive that failed?
So that's a good question. The do you know what the exact, does it just say Norton Virus? Do you know what the version of the software is?
It's the 360.
Okay. And yeah, you should be able to use that for backups to, you know, whatever drive you might want, whether it's an external drive, since you seem to have that USB adapter as well. But you should be able to back it up to different sources. I haven't actually used the product myself, but I don't see why it wouldn't work for you.
Chris, thanks for that. And again, that's another reminder to have a variety of different backups for your important data. I mean, you just, you know, one of the things about the digital world is things are either on or off. You don't often get warning when a component is going to fail, do you?
Yeah, you usually have things fail at the worst possible time. And having data backups is really, really important. That Norton product is also a solution, I think, depending on you know, what you want to pay for, if you want to buy your own solution, that actually does also offer, it looks like a cloud-based solution. So it's potentially that backup option is a service that will back up somewhere else or an external hard drive. So, you know, there's lots of options out there.
Chris, thanks so much for your call. You could be on the program as well at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. If you call now, we should have time to get your question answered before 12:30 when we have to go away here. Here's an email from Sylvia. I'm a Mac user, and I need to sort, trash, and store only my best raw photo files on a one-month safari in Africa. Electricity is limited, and weight is a major issue. What are the options for a computer or iPad? Wow. First of all, a safari. That sounds exciting.
Yeah, and, So I guess it depends kind of the files that, you know, how large are they? How many do you have? There's a few different apps built into the iPad that will allow you to do some of this work. I think iPhoto, but there are some larger applications. I would actually check out the App Store. I haven't done a whole lot of video sorting. Generally, what I have is very simple. In this case, there are probably some very good photo management apps that you can get directly from the App Store that'll work on Mac OS as well. So it's something you could use as long as you have iTunes open or the App Store that you can use on your Mac, desktop or laptop that you have, as well as your iPad. And they might also have subscription options where you can move your photos back and forth. You take a picture on your iPad, it shows up on your desktop. You can still use the same application to modify and organize it.
I'm guessing access to the cloud out in the bush of Africa on a safari is probably going to be limited as well.
That's definitely going to be a limit. I would look at the options for the application itself. Some apps work completely differently where they cache everything on your machine. Some require that connection all the time. It just depends on, you know, what options are available in the application.
Sylvia, I'll make you an offer. I'll walk around behind you carrying an external storage device if you bring me along on the safari. Well, that's probably not going to happen. Let's go to David in Milwaukee. David, hello.
Hello. Hi. I refurbish Windows computers, but whenever I enter the Apple ecosystem, I run into trouble. And I have an iPad first generation running 5.1.1, and I'm trying to go up to iOS 7, and I can't find anything on the internet to help me to do it.
All right, and I'm going to actually take a look here. It's very possible you cannot upgrade. And since the software is developed by Apple, they're going to, you know, make sure it only runs on the latest software. Looking here, I just found a different article. iOS 7 won't run even on the iPad 2. So you actually need to upgrade to newer hardware to get the very latest version of software. There's a lot of other things you can find online to try to do hacks to get it to work. In this case, it's probably a functional reason why they don't want it loaded onto the older hardware. It's probably not going to work that well, or maybe even work at all. So they just don't allow it. So it's not something that you could do under kind of the Apple EULA. If you found something, maybe it would work. Most likely it's going to be illegal. But right now there's just no way to do it. Unfortunately, it would be a newer iPad.
David, I think that's how they always they convince you to buy upgraded machinery, is to just make it impossible for you to use the old stuff. David, thanks for your call, and good luck with your upgrade issue there. 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. We're solving your computer problems with Jesse LeGrew today from the UW's Division of Information and Technology, or DOIT, as we call it. Here's an email from Neil in Sussex. Neil writes, I have a PC running Windows 8.1. Graphics and emails in Office Outlook will not show. I have tried some of the suggestions found online, but they did not work. Any thoughts?
So this definitely depends on many things, including the version of Outlook. One security feature that especially the later versions of Outlook have is they turn off image browsing, so they don't automatically load, because there could be bad things people are sending you via your email that might do bad things to your computer. So they tried to strip all those features away to make you safer. There are ways to get that functionality back in your email, but it's also just a note that it could be a potential security risk. For my version of Outlook, usually when I highlight a message on the very top, it says, hey, there are messages here. Click here to view the messages, and you have to accept a little security prompt. Otherwise, in my version of this is Outlook 2013, you can go to the Trust Center under Outlook Options, and they have different options for automatically downloading specific portions of your email and what can be displayed. And that's going to be the location that's going to have all of that stuff. In this case, it's most likely just that security feature kind of getting in the way of viewing those images.
Yeah, and in some versions of Office, the Outlook, the email will display in the preview window, and then it'll ask you to right-click on the email in a box and tell it to download the pictures, and it won't show them to you until you do that.
Yep, and sometimes just double-clicking on the message might actually bring up a full view window, and it'll view there, but you're still probably going to have that prompt. But take a look at the prompt and the Outlook options, and you should find it.
All right, Neil, good luck with that question. We're getting some calls in here. That's great. We'll take those all the way up until about almost 12:30 today on the Larry Mueller Show. John Munson in for Larry Mueller this week. And my guest is Jesse LeGrew, and he's a computer expert at the UW's Division of Information Technology. And we're talking about your computer problems today. We'll start, we'll go to Kyle in Madison. Kyle, how you doing today?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Pretty good so far, but the day is young. What's your computer question?
My question is how to get mail to links to open up in Outlook.com. To explain the problem, I've tried to look up online how to get this to work, and people tell me it's impossible, but it used to work before Hotmail merged with Outlook. And for example, to explain what I want to happen, like if you're on Craigslist or something, and you click to email whoever had made the posting, it's supposed to open up a new tab in Hotmail or Outlook or whatever website you want, and it'll already fill in the subject line with, you know, the title of the posting or whatever, and it just makes it really easy to send emails. But now the default behavior doesn't seem to allow for that, and it makes you want to open up Outlook as a separate program. It won't let you respond to emails directly in your browser.
So you're using the hot, the kind of a hot link where there's a mail to embedded in the message.
Yes.
All right, Jesse LeGrew.
So that's a good question. Actually, not even one I had thought about. So off the top of my head, I honestly have no clue how you would even do that, because I've always seen it where you do need a separate application. It's one of those things you can tweak depending on what you click on. It opens a different app. I took a look just online at some other items. Firefox, for example, does have options for Yahoo Mail or Gmail. So it looks like it actually is capable of doing this. It's possible you could get a plugin, whether you're using Firefox or Chrome, potentially Internet Explorer as well. I would assume Internet Explorer might have a plugin for that kind of functionality. Off the top of my head, unfortunately, I don't know.
Because it's pretty common for if you click on a mail to link in whatever it is, whether it's on a website or wherever, that it'll open whatever the default email browser is in your operating system. Isn't that pretty usual or pretty normal?
It's pretty normal to have when you click on an email link or a mail to link in this case, to have it open in, you know, Outlook or Thunderbird. Those are very common. In this case, clicking on the link and then actually staying in the browser and opening not really an application but a website, so you can actually reply to the email in there. And that's a little bit different. And it does appear that, you know, there are some options. I'm just not certain if it's going to be an option for, you know, in this case.
Okay. Kyle, good luck with that. That's I'm sure that's a really frustrating problem. I know that if you scroll over a mail to link, it should show you the email address, shouldn't it?
Correct.
Okay, so I guess one option there, if you know, you can have your Hotmail open in another tab and scroll over that link on Craigslist or wherever it is, and and you know, try and remember what it was or write it down. Probably not the best option for you, but that is the only one I can think of. Here's an email from Justin in Milwaukee. Any recommendations for backing up music and photos that are on a laptop that runs Vista? Wow, there are many duplicate copies that I would like to clean up before backing up. What can you offer for help for Justin?
So for backing up, you can use a lot of the same programs that would probably run on Windows 7. It should be compatible. So whether it comes with an external hard drive that you can just drag and drop just for ease. I believe there is a built-in backup utility there, but also the various software that comes with those external hard drives, because they do have stuff that will work. As far as kind of the deduplication portion of it, there's a few different ways to do it. It really depends on how much data you have. For music, I've used MediaMonkey, which is, I think you do have a free option. There are, I think I actually bought a subscription for that because it had a lot of very powerful features. But you could use that to actually, it will analyze the files, the size, bitrate, everything, and hopefully give you an idea of, hey, these are all duplicates, and it will allow you to wipe them out and make sure you only have one copy and that it's the highest bitrate, etc. As far as the photos, that might be a little bit different. Generally, if I had multiple copies of photos, it's easy enough to search for all the picture files, view the additional columns so you can see the file type or the file size and the date modified. And normally, if you sort by the file size, the bigger files, if you have duplicates, the bigger ones are usually going to be the higher quality images. So that's one way to get an idea. I don't know off the top of my head what other programs have an additional, you know, option to actually look at the data within the photo itself. So there's, you know, that's a little trick, but as far as backups, there's a lot of different ways you can do it. But I definitely recommend MediaMonkey. It's a nice program. There's probably a lot of other ones out there. And then photos might just be a little bit more difficult.
All right. Good luck with that, Justin. 800-642-1234. We have a couple of minutes left. Might be able to sneak in one more call. Probably an email might be quicker. We talked about virus or malware that is making the rounds earlier in the program. Do you have any hardware or software updates that we really should be aware of?
Off the top of my head, there's not a whole lot of updates. Today is the first. So next Tuesday is going to be updates for Microsoft for Windows and a lot of their various software. But otherwise, things are pretty normal. Nothing out of the ordinary that people, at least to my knowledge, would need to be concerned about.
Okay, we've got a little over a minute left, but here's a quick question from Peter on Facebook. My question is regarding an error message I keep getting that states your connection is not private. How can I resolve this?
The one thing I'd look at right away is just verify how you're viewing Facebook and that it's using HTTPS, which should show a little lock. If it's using HTTP, that could be the indication it's something that other people might be able to view. Make sure that link is HTTPS, and you can also update that in your Facebook settings to make sure it always goes to that secure link so that people can't look at any of the data that you're sending.
Well, and some antivirus programs will also warn you if you have one that covers your wireless device that you're on a wireless network that they don't think is secure enough, and it'll say, hey, do you really want to be online here, and warn you about that.
Yep, and most of those, depending on the software you have, whether it's Windows or Mac OS, they'll usually have a small shield or an indicator to kind of warn you of an insecure connection, usually looking for any kind of secure lock mechanism. Image is a good way to go in websites and for a wireless browsing.
All right. Well, it's always better to be safe than sorry, whether it comes to backing up or antivirus. Jesse LeGrew, thank you for spending this time with us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Jesse LeGrew is a technical team lead within the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Division of Information Technology, focusing on desktop and laptop security projects. This program was produced by Cheyenne Lenz, on-air production by Cheyenne Lenz, and assistance also provided by Dave Potratz. I'm John Munson in for Larry Mueller. I'll be back tomorrow at 11 with more on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.